the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right. Well, I hope everybody had a great, great, great Christmas. I am your host, Eric Dorsch. We are here officially for the last episode of 2020, the year where, Jay, you can make the argument it was one of the worst years of our lives, but it might have been the best year for our show. We kept going. We plowed through, and we did a full season in 2020.
We did, and we practiced all the COVID safety protocols that were, you know, expected of us, and we followed through, man. We quarantined. We did everything we needed to do. That how is it that hard to do for other people?
Yeah, I don't get it. You'll notice that I'm not introing the stat man, Russ Ivanek, for the first time since 2017. Russ is not on the show today. He's got the in-laws in town, couldn't make it, sent us plenty. Like, come on, would we really be doing a show if Russ didn't send us copious amounts of notes that we have to meticulously go through, ask him to define certain words, explain the math there? It's a lot. But to get this out of the way quick, Jay, because he said that he didn't think we were going to do it, we're going to talk about golf right away. Happy birthday to Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is 45 today. It's officially a birthday for Tiger Woods. And there's your little golf right there. I told you we were going to talk about golf. You missing the game yet with all this cold weather?
A little bit. I've been using the putting green you got me. So me and the kids have been taking swings at that. And my dad came over for Christmas and he was trying to teach everyone how to golf. So it was nice. But back on the Tiger thing, I saw a clip of Tiger today. He had like an all khaki outfit on, taking one of his like first tee shots or something. I'm like, who the fuck? Oh, that's Tiger. Yeah. And then I realized it was T. Woods' birthday. So Russ, we did talk about golf. Just for the record.
Just for the record, we got into golf. Real quickly, because I was very happy to get you that present. I knew you'd love it. Who loves it more, though? The girls or you?
Ooh, the girls get to use it more than I do.
Yeah.
And then I go fetch all the balls. I put them to sleep, and I do probably 8 or 9 putts, and then I sit down and have a beer. So I think it's equally shared for now. I think I'm going to be in the long game more than they will be using it.
Yeah, you never know, man. One of these girls could be practicing sinking a putt for the women's U.S. amateur here soon.
Dude,
it's great to have.
Dude, Nora has a whole, like, we're going to keep talking golf, so Russ has to listen to this. Nora has, like, a whole regimen. She walks up with her feet tight together. She puts her hand on her thigh. She separates her left foot from her right foot, and then she leans over the ball, and then she has the wild back swing like I have, and she goes after it. But she's got a routine that she legitimately does every time she approaches a ball, so I love it.
That's great. That's what you want, though. You got to get that routine down, start draining putts, start taking money off of dad, making a bet, you know? Dad, I'll bet you a quarter I can sink this putt. Bam. Before you know it, that girl is loaded. It's going to be great. Moving on. I hope no one watched this game. Lord knows I didn't. I went and took a nap during this. Our Lions, Jay, they're doing everything they can to sink as low as they can. I would say it's safe to assume Bevel's chances of a head coaching interview are pretty much all but gone after a 47-7 loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers led by Tom Brady.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of people were talking about, like, oh, well, he wasn't at the game, so it doesn't count on his record. And I just laugh at that because, like, he has to, like, he still came to work the rest of the week. Like, it's all on his watch. Mm-mm. This is a true sign that, A, coaches matter, and, B, Matt Stafford is our team. And when 5 quarterbacks play a game and both of your starting quarterbacks are gone by the first half and you lose that badly, That's on Bevel's watch, and unfortunately, maybe for our benefit, fortunately, he won't be the HC next year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be upset with him returning as offensive coordinator because I think single-minded tasking, he's very good at running the offense. He just, you know, he had a lot of uphill to deal with. And look, the second they fired Patricia, he was against the wall all the way. There was only one way he gets an interview, and that's going 5-0 to finish the year, and that's an impossible task that I would defy you to find the coach ever in the history of football that could go 5-0 with this team, knowing full well you lose a game, you're done.
Yeah. I mean, even when you look at some of the candidates that are linked to the Lions, none of them are like losing record. Like, oh, this guy lost 6 out of the last 7 games last year. Like, no one's like, oh, yeah, he's a great coach. you look at the Bellamy's, the or no, what is his name? What's the guy's name
I think you got it
from
right.
Kansas City?
Yeah, I think you
Was it
got it right.
Bellamy?
Yeah, I think you got it right.
Something like that. My point is, you're looking at successful coaches. You're not looking at Bevel and a losing record saying, yep, he needs to be the next head coach of the Texans.
Well, yeah, and I want to get into this head coaching thing because a certain name came up, and I want to get your opinion on it. Before we do, though, Brady, 22 of 27, 348, four touchdowns, didn't play in the second half, no surprise there. On the other side, Stafford, 2 of 3, 17 yards, taken out, replaced by Chase Daniels, 13 of 18, 86 yards passing. No real great running. Swift, 10 carries, 45 yards. Leading receiver was Danny Amendola with five catches for 37 yards. Just a really overall off bad day for this team. But I have to ask, Jay, 5-10, one game left against the Minnesota Vikings. It means nothing. And the Lions are great at winning the mean nothing games. But if you're the Lions and you want to show that things are really turning around for this franchise, Matt Stafford has to be in street clothes this Sunday, correct?
1 bajillion % correct. Like I'm heated about that, and that's why a bajillion's my number. You, if you like, you put it right. If you give a damn, you say, "Hey, tough guy, sit down." Because when we have an opportunity of some wonky roadmap of having a third overall pick, that helps you hire the GM that's going to have an asset from day one that he gets to link his name to with his first pick. So Stafford needs to be tough from the sideline.
Absolutely. And for me, this is the thing of you, Chase Daniel, you want to prove you're the backup that we need to keep around. I get he's got a multiple year deal, but in this day and age, backup quarterbacks can be gotten rid of very quickly, we've seen. Starting quarterbacks can. This is a game where Chase Daniel needs to come out and play great. Because guess what? It's a two-way thing. One, you play really well. We feel real comfortable with you, and we keep you around. Two, you play out of your mind. You become a valuable trade chip to potentially get on a team where you have a chance to competitively play. Like it or not, the Jets, the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're both vying for starting quarterbacks. Neither of them need to be starting these guys week one. Chase Daniels could easily find his way into a Fitzpatrick situation of starting for a year, giving these guys a chance to rest. So it's kind of that value of Chase Daniel really having to show out. But I agree. Stafford, you're in street clothes this week. Hold on to the clipboard, write down the plays. Heck, you don't even have to come to the game if you don't want. You can sit at home and watch it with your daughters and Kelly for all I care. There's no reason this guy steps on the field. Fox can play quarterback before Stafford can in this next game. And who knows? Fox might be an amazing quarterback. He's been a great punter. I do, like I said, Russ left us with copious notes. I can't read a word of them because they're Russ, we gotta work on your. I'm gonna give you a what's that, calligraphy class so you can learn how to write perfectly so we can read this because just
My daughter has some of those worksheets downstairs for her kindergarten class. I've used them. They work.
I'm gonna give Russ one because it's just straight chicken scratch over here. But I do want to read this one because I think it fits into the next part we're gonna talk about. This defense just being abysmal, just horrible, horrible defense. And Russ did want to point out that the 195 points that the Lions have given up in the last 5 weeks are the only time they've given up 180-plus points over a five-game stretch since 2008. For those of you that don't remember, 2008, we went 0-16. 195 now versus 181 in the 100, in the 0-16 season. Historically bad defense. It's just not a good time. And, Jay, the problem is I've almost shifted from I don't even think a true defensive-minded coach can come in and fix this defense year one.
Yeah, and that's like when you go through the resumes and you see defensive minded, I bet, you know, a less than average fan would go, well, that didn't work with Patricia, so why would it work with Slay or Saleh, rather?
Yeah, I was gonna say like, Saleh is the front runner right now. So
yeah. But like if you dig deeper into it, it's not just the coach, man. It Russ had a perfect analogy and I already forgot it. I think it's something to do with like the head coach or the head chef and some other part of the restaurant, but like it's a marriage between the two. And if you have less than desirable talent, you can't coach skill. Like you have to coach the chemistry and the team. I don't mind looking at another defensive minded head coach because that's what we suck at.
Well, and see, I think part of it too, and anyone who wants to say it can say it didn't work with Patricia. You're right. It didn't work with Patricia because there was one thing no one who was paying attention realized until it was too late. Bob Quinn Matt Patricia, both from Patriots. We're trying to rebuild the Patriot way of thinking, but the problem was all they were getting from that were the guys Bill Belichick was okay not having around anymore. Guess what? That means you're not that good. If Bill Belichick doesn't want you to be playing, he's okay letting you move on. That's a sign of things. It really is. By the way, if you haven't seen it, have you seen Bill Belichick just flipping out on the sideline phone?
No.
Greatest thing ever. He's calling up to the booth, talking, and at the end of the call, just chucks the phone right into the bleacher or into the bench. Amazing.
Was this against the Bills over the weekend?
Yeah, over the Bills over the weekend. Just amazing.
Oh, no shit.
Amazing, amazing. Which, by the way, I want to get, before we get too far away, I do want to get into, have you seen Cam Newton's morning routine? Because I just don't think it meshes well with your morning routine. The guy wakes up, does stuff at like, guy wakes up at like 4, 4:30 every day, doesn't have a sip of coffee until 8 a.m. You would die.
Yeah, no, I sometimes have those like bouts of energy, but no, dude, it you go to the coffee pot to do the things you need to do. So this is probably why it's not going to work out for him long term in New England.
Yeah, you're like Michael Scott. You like to wake up to the smell of fresh coffee being made. I'm surprised you don't have a coffee maker on your nightstand. I know you, and your coffee is a thing for you. It really is. So yeah, this is just a bad team overall. I do want to though. I as I mentioned, there was a name that came out. Now again, he speculated with multiple teams. When I first read it, I go, okay, this is clickbait. It has to be. But then it popped up here. It popped up there. It popped up all over the place to the point that it's a vying story now. Urban Meyer, former Ohio State head coach, is considering leaving the analytics desk and taking an NFL job. Right now, Jacksonville and Detroit are the two teams. Does a guy like Urban Meyer take away the offense he runs and what he does, the proven track record of success? Granted, it's in college. It's not an NFL thing. We've seen guys like Pete Carroll go to Seattle from USC and have success. But we've also seen numerous, and I say numerous, college coaches make the jump, and it's too much for them. They're underwater before they even, you know what's going on. Does a guy like Urban Meyer with a winning track record, about, I believe now 2 years removed from the sideline, is he a viable front candidate for the Detroit Lions?
As much as I don't like going for the flashy shit, he is. The one thing that helps him is that wins erase everything. So all the, you go from athletes who need to show up for chemistry at 1 o'clock in the morning to dudes who make more money than you do. Mm-hmm. And they're driving in their Lambos to go to practice. You know, all the cliches of why it doesn't translate gets wiped away because all he's done is won. And I know some of it was under speculation at Ohio State, which that kind of stains his career a little bit, but look, if we find out on a Monday morning that Urban Meyer is the head coach of the Detroit Lions, it's better than what we got. And if it fails, then now we know, A, we can't be the Patriots, and B, we can't take college coaches to the NFL, and we're just a guinea pig for the rest of the league.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing, too, is for me, I hate that leap. We already took a chance on a guy who we realized really wasn't ready to be a head coach. He just was in the right situation in New England that he looked a lot better than he really was. And by the way, Bill Belichick, if you haven't taken the time to look, Bill Belichick's coaching tree of people that leave and go elsewhere is just horrible for a guy who's supposed to be the Messiah. There are like two guys that actually stuck it out more than a year or two after leaving, and that's Vrabel in Tennessee, who never actually coached with Belichick, and then Bill O'Brien, who was recently just fired. Only thing that makes me happier, O'Brien's assistant, Romeo Crennel, who is now the interim head coach, also a Bill Belichick disciple. So you just can't get away from Patriot Nation. But it's that he's great in college. But as we know, as we've seen with players, with coaches, with everything, college and the NFL are just two different animals. They don't exactly correlate. Just because you're great in college does not mean you're going to be great in the NFL. There's things that are done differently. And the other thing, too, if it used to be this way, if you agree to go to, like, if you take a player and get them, they can't just choose to leave at any time. In the NFL, these guys don't have to stay if they don't want to. They've proven it. They can find ways to get out, and I don't know how Urban Meyer deals with that. I don't know how he, like, if he's prepared to handle that. And like you said, how do you stack up when you're making $5 million a year as a head coach and your $45 million quarterback tells you he wants to do things differently? We saw it happen in San Francisco with Harbaugh and Kaepernick. Now, I think it's fair to say both of those two lost out on that one. I mean, Kaepernick's not in the league anymore, and Harbaugh is just dying at U of M right now. But it's not the same. You can't talk to players the same way. You can't treat players the same way. What he said was wrong, but a big side of that is Beilein from U of M going to the Cavaliers, saying something you don't say, but at the same time, he lost that locker room well before that, and now he's out of a job altogether.
Yep. How do you do your job from a quasi-disciplinary role when you're in college? Because you're basically disciplining young men and women to this is how you act like an adult. This is how you work in the industry. This is how you do this, you know, as long as you're doing it correctly. And then go try to tell that to someone, like you said, who makes $45 million. They're going to say, boo, go away. Like that just sets things off in the wrong tone for, you know, one of the biggest sports leagues in the world.
Well, but it also sets up the point of, and you know, you're the commissioner, you're the GM of this show, you have been and always will be, who's around longer? We've seen it. Matt Stafford's still here. All these other coaches have moved on. So if you go toe-to-toe with a franchise $40 million a year quarterback, you are going to lose unless that guy is just really bad and no one's realizing, like what's happening in Philly with Wentz. Wentz is just pouting and crying, and they're all going, okay, bye, see you later. Jalen Hurts is a real deal quarterback. So it is. It's that situation of just not working out. That's enough about the teams that aren't going to be in the playoffs. I want to talk about the teams that are going to be in the playoffs. We're kind of doing this rough draft style here, but kind of want to get your predictions on who do you see final game of the year in that Super Bowl. I know you mentioned that Russ had Seattle and Buffalo, if I'm not mistaken.
He did. He's got New Orleans and Seattle, and then he's got Buffalo, Kansas City, with Seattle and Buffalo going at it.
Okay. I like that. Buffalo just seems like a team of destiny right now. There's just no stopping them. They are playing great football, so I like that. I do. Other side, Seattle. I really like Seattle. I just think Seattle is going to be like Pittsburgh. Hot in the start, I just think they're going to fizz out at the end. I love Russell Wilson. I still think he's the best quarterback in the league. DK Metcalf's amazing. I just don't think they have enough firepower to get through a playoff season against the teams they're going to have to face. At some point, you're going to have to see the Saints. You're going to have to see all these teams that just have way too much firepower to overcome.
Yeah, and I when I was looking at Seattle, because I'll start there, because I also have Seattle coming out of my end of the deal. Out of the NFC, they are a well-balanced team. And when you look at their numbers defensively and offensively compared to the rest of the league in terms of points for, I'm taking Russ's job right now, which I'm going to borrow it for a hot second and give it right back to him. So I can say like 1 + 1 = 4, and he's not here to fact check me. They are an average team, but they're a good average team. And I've got Seattle going up. Green Bay does look like the team that's going to come out of the NFC. Aaron Rodgers, like they drafted Justin Love for no reason. So Rodgers is just, they're legit. They might make it out, but I'm going with Seattle just because they can stay consistent. They're not too bad at offense. They're not too bad at defense. They're right in that middle where they can have these low scoring games where they eke out wins in the fourth quarter. They've done it for most of the season this year. So I've got Seattle on that end. On that, and I don't respect Tyson Hill out of New Orleans. Like,
love me,
you're not
some
the quarterback.
Hill. Love me some you're Taysom not... Hill. By the way, I pointed it out to you guys months ago. If whoever tried to troll me on Twitter wants to come on this show and talk this out, I'd love to have the conversation. A couple months ago, when they signed Jameis Winston, I said, that's just a stupid signing. Taysom Hill will be the backup quarterback if anything happens to Breeze. And I got just bombarded with, this shows you don't know anything about football. This is an idiotic thing. Jameis Winston plays. Jameis Winston should be on the field. Guess what? You were all wrong. Taysom Hill was the backup quarterback. It's just, look, is it weird? Yeah, he's a gadget guy. He's fun to watch. I don't really think that, I think after seeing what he can do, I think they have reservations about naming him the heir apparent. I think they're going to be looking. But at the same time, Taysom Hill, he did what he had to do. It was fun to watch. Still think it's insane. He's been in the league for like 6 years, and this year got his first passing touchdown.
So to trigger Eric, all you have to say is Taysom Hill, and it works.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. It's just how it goes.
But from that gadget perspective, with Breeze all banged up, you've got the rib issues. I don't really respect Taysom Hill. Kamara can't run 6 touchdowns, almost 7 touchdowns every game. the Saints, even though we have a lot of respect for them on this show, I don't see them coming that way. So to wrap that up, it's Seattle out of the NFC. Moving over to the AFC, and Russ and I have similar minds here. Russ said, Steelers showing the mental toughness of a rattled toddler.
Yep.
And it's so damn true. They bitched about their schedule getting flexed around everywhere. They are banged up like none other. They have five linebackers who are on IR and two running backs on IR as well right now. So their record is cute, but they're dead in the water. So the Steelers have to go away. No one is going to outgun the Kansas City Chiefs. You can't keep up with how much and how often and how quick they are going to score. So despite loving the Steelers, because I don't know, they're becoming like my second team for some reason, it's Kansas City, so it's going to be Seattle, Kansas City for me in the Super Bowl.
Seattle, Kansas City. Okay, I mean it's a great matchup. Two of the best quarterbacks in the league. I love what you guys did. I think it's a great couple games. Look, I said what I said about Buffalo. Josh Allen just seems like the guy right now. That offense is firing on all cylinders. It's fun to watch. Kansas City is Kansas City. You're the defending champion. You get the respect you deserve until you don't deserve it anymore. I'll give it to him. That being said, I don't have either of those teams coming out of the AFC.
Ooh.
I dare you to find the defense in that AFC, and I'll give you a minute to think about it, that can stop Derrick Henry. That's right. It doesn't exist.
I mean, it would be the Steelers. The Steelers have the second fewest yards, you know, on average per game. So it would be the Steelers, but Devin Bush isn't there. So yeah,
the way that defense is playing in Tennessee, it's not great, but it's good enough to get a couple stops and hold them around. Then all it is it's the Tannehill Henry show. It's a slow, methodic offense that scores and is efficient, that eats up a shit ton of time. And guess what? If you're Kansas City or if you're Buffalo, you want that ball as often as possible because you want to run up that score. Well, guess what? If you only see the ball four times and a half, it's really hard to score four times when you're sitting on the bench for 7, 8, 9 minutes at a time not doing anything. So I like them. Obviously, Buffalo and Kansas City are the two favorites. I just think Vrabel has figured out something with that offense where they are effective, efficient, and fun to watch. Is it the most boring offense on the planet? Yeah, because it's running the ball 57 times a game, but it's running the ball 57 times a game for like 400 yards on the ground. So I'm taking the Tennessee Titans to get in on that side. Other side, what bothers me is that we're going to have someone from the NFC East in the playoffs. Washington, Dallas, New York Giants, or the Philadelphia Eagles. One of them gets to be in the playoffs. That's disgusting. I don't know how that's happening.
So sad.
Yeah,
I agree
with you. I agree with you. Green Bay does look like that team in the NFC that everybody has to go through. And that is a big advantage because they are likely going to get home field advantage. Having to go up to the frozen tundra every week when you're New Orleans or Tampa Bay or Seattle is not going to be a fun experience for them. I see it as a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
The only upside, Russell Wilson played college football in Wisconsin. So he's at least knows what to expect out of it. It's good there. That being said, I am going to, and I'm not doing this because of who is quarterback, Jay, so calm down. I'm going to take Tampa Bay
to win the NFC. Not.
For your reasoning, the New Orleans Saints have a high-flying offense. Breeze can't turn to his left because half of his rib cage is gone. Michael Thomas just really doesn't seem to, like he's still a great receiver, doesn't seem. Kamara is all they've got going for him right now, and if you know that, you're going to stack for that. Seattle, I love Seattle. Like I said, though, I think they don't have enough firepower to beat out the other teams they have to get past. Obviously, Green Bay is great. Adams, Rodgers is having an MVP season. He's playing great. Tampa Bay just, they 47 points on us. Take that for what it is. It's still 47 points. You got to complete the passes. Gronk, Evans, I don't know why AB is on this team, but he's on this team, so we'll talk about him. Fournette, Brady, there's just too many names on that offense to find the defense that can slow it down and stop it of those teams. So I'm taking Tampa Bay. I'm taking Tennessee. I think it's going to be a fun game, and it's going to be two really actual good Patriot disciples playing for a Super Bowl, not the bad ones.
I love the pick. If that happens, I'll give you $100, just straight up.
Okay.
If Tennessee Tampa, like that would be the most like appropriate way to end, I guess, not 2020, but to end this season of football is that just straight up like under the radar underdogs. I
Two
mean,
team,
Tennessee,
yeah.
like, yeah, like this would be like, oh my God, what are we watching on the Super Bowl? Like, what is happening here? So
Yeah.
I like it. I respect it.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. I'm excited to see it just for that fact of you're literally talking about a playoff picture here, Jay, where the possibilities are endless. Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and Kansas City all have legitimate arguments to be in the Super Bowl. And on the other side, forget the NFC East, it doesn't exist. Green Bay, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Seattle, all teams that legitimately you can say will make the Super Bowl, and it's hard to make the argument against it.
It is. And speaking of arguments, real quickly, because I know Russ is probably fuming right now. I read his notes wrong. This is what happens when the trio is not put together. Russ had the exact opposite of what I said to everybody. It was actually a Kansas City Saints Super Bowl.
Oh, wow. That changes everything. I need to rethink predictions here. It doesn't
I
change anything.
apologize.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, I know Russ has literally been screaming at his iTunes for the last 10 minutes while we've been talking, saying, make the change, read the notes. How I missed that too, because I'm looking at its notes too, and I just didn't even think about it. So those are our predictions. Obviously, we'll probably revamp, retalk about it as we go. Like I said, this is the last show of the year. We'll be having another one next week. It'll just be a different year. Jay, this is the topic I was actually excited to talk to you about because I know you wanted to get into it. You were excited for it. NBA back, it's playing. Early stage of the Pistons, they're 0-4 right now. Could have legitimately could be 3-1 right now. They've just missed out on opportunities. But like we expected, this is a team who, as I put in the notes, looks like they've never played together before because guess what? They have never all played together before. It's a bunch of rookies. It's players that have been traded. The only two holdovers are Derrick Rose and Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin got his like head split open yesterday with concussion. And he has not played that much. So I want to ask you early on, again, we're only four games in, still have a long ways to go in all this, but enough of a sample size we can at least have the conversation. Your opinion of these early put together Pistons?
So one takeaway I had from reading up on them a little bit, thanks Hulu for still not allowing us to watch games for Russ and I. But the Freep did a nice piece on Pistons seasons starting the season 0-4. They've done it three other times, and two out of the three times they've been below 500 and missed the playoffs, obviously. One time they went two games over 500. So it's a small sample size, but the history shows that this will probably end up how we all think it will. And these are the growing pains that we're going through. Jeremy Grant averaging 21 points a game so far and being the leader on this team is nice for a guy who's been around the league for 5, 6 years and kind of gets to be that somewhat quasi-veteran presence on the team. Plumlee, he was the leader in assists in two games and the leader in rebounds in two games. So his sample size is right on brand. That gritty Glenn Denning get in the corner kind of guy. I knew Plumlee was my man when I locked eyes with him. So this is a marriage made in heaven. But those are just some smaller things we get to look forward to is watching the team actually grow because it's going to be rough. I don't I if we could put $500 in every game for the Pistons to lose and just fade them every time, we'd probably come up ahead. And knowing that we are going to lose a lot, it helps to actually look at these players and see what we have for the future. So far, it's okay, but having Griffin go out with a concussion could be a problem for all these youngsters on the team.
I like, just because I feel like we haven't gotten it over the last couple of years, I like their immediate desire to get Killian Hayes on the floor, letting him start, letting him really just, you're throwing him into the deep end and saying, let's see if you can sink or swim. We'll know what we get out of you. Sadiq Bey is an amazing shooter. It's fun to see. He's got the ugliest jump shot I've ever seen in my life, but it still goes in. Hey, as long as it goes in. The guy I'm actually really excited to watch, Michigan native. Went to Kansas. Josh Jackson. I like him. He's playing good basketball. I think as we get into the deeper part of the season, you're going to see them kind of focus on him as the guy to, to go to when they need the points. Blake just seems a lot more passive this year. Derrick Rose can't do what he used to, so he's more of a setup guy. I love your call on Plumlee. He really is kind of fun to watch. He's just passing big man, makes great moves. I'm really enjoying that. And like we said, this is a team that up until 6 weeks ago, we're not on the same team. They are still trying to develop the chemistry. You see these guys making passes, and there's not a guy there because they're used to someone being there from old systems. They're still figuring out, oh, okay, so if I wait a second longer, you're going to be in a perfect spot. So it's that learning thing. And I go right to Russ's notes here. To everyone that worried that they would be too good, I use air quotes there, to get a top pick, that does not appear to be the concern with a 4-0 start. Blake and D-Rose already injured. Bay leapfrogged Sekou for minutes, which is true. Sekou Doumbouya is just kind of becoming an afterthought, which I hate because I love watching him. Russ, your chicken scratch is killing me. Bad but fun, fun team, interesting. It is a lot of that. You go into every game not knowing what you're going to get because we're still learning about these guys. I do like Jeremy Grant. I don't think he's going to have the stay power to be that leading guy throughout the year. But overall, it's fun. Now, that's the Pistons. But, Jay, I have to ask because you said you wanted to get into it. Have you branched out? Are you kind of paying attention to the rest of the league? Are there any teams that are kind of becoming the Justin Marcus, side team right now?
Steelers are occupying the side team piece, but I'm paying attention to the league as if it was a soap opera, basically, because there's just a lot of bullshit that goes around. And you start five guys, you have a bench, right? You get to focus in on the ins and outs of players. So there's a couple of things I was watching. First of all, the Mavs and the Bucks coming out of nowhere and just saying, hey, let's show everyone doesn't play defense early and just start destroying teams. The Bucks broke, the 3-point record, I think, just the other night?
It was 77-27 at halftime against a Clippers team who is supposed to be like the number two team in the West behind the Lakers. LA is supposed to own basketball. I hate to break it to you, Kawhi Leonard also split his head open, got injured. This Mavericks team just said, no, we're the guys you got to watch out for. Everybody else can figure this out.
So that drama was great when that ensued. Kevin Durant is already showing returns for the Brooklyn Nets. Mm-hmm. So he looks like he's 100% and ready to go for them. On the flip side, some of my favorite drama, not the favorite just quite yet, John Morant getting hurt, that sucks. Yeah. John Morant, like that offense runs through him. And the fact that he's going to be out for 3 to 5 weeks, it might help for the playoffs, have a lower seed, face a lesser opponent when you get there. But that sucks for him.
Well, you and I had a big debate last year, too, because you were a John Morant guy and I was a Zion guy. Like we completely were on opposite ends of the spectrum. I love watching John Morant. I think he's amazing. I still think I see a lot more upside than Zion. The problem is they still want to go load management with Zion. They don't really want to take the training wheels off. Whereas John Morant, they're like, just keep playing. We don't care. Just keep playing.
See, first of all, he came in with the underdog mentality. You know, I go for the underdog in a heartbeat. But John Morant's basically just freestyling out there. It's entertaining to watch.
For those of you that don't believe he comes in with the underdog mentality, Justin Marcus is the only person in Metro Detroit that owns a shirt that has Luke Glendening's name on the back of it and a captain's patch on the front of it.
So, that's my brand of hockey, man.
Delusional brand of hockey?
Yes. The only other bit of drama, which, I'm really starting to fucking hate this guy.
Oh, God.
And that's James Harden.
Oh, everybody hates James Harden.
I do not care who's going to trade him. I do not care. He shows up to camp, or he shows up to the season overweight, not ready. He's going to strip clubs. He's breaking COVID policies. He's begging to get traded from his organization. And every day when I want to go look up what's going on in the NBA, his name and his beard show up. And I'm over James Harden. He's a big old baby. Yeah. So
I'm with you on the James Harden thing. I almost had to turn off the notifications just because I don't care, to be honest with you. It's just one of those things, go wherever you want. You want to go play for, for the Lakers? Sure, if they can afford you, go ahead. Go play for the Lakers. I really don't care. It's reached a point now where wherever he goes, that team is fully accepted. They are a lottery pick next year because he's bringing so much baggage with him. And that's the problem. That's why he's still in Houston. None of the contending teams he wants to play for want him because they understand we're contending because we have the right match of things. So I agree with you that. I don't really think it's drama. I just think it's a really interesting thing. We played Golden State last night. We lost to Golden State. Hung with them for the longest time. Played really well. Obviously, the big thing with Golden State is no Klay Thompson for the year. But it's that weird thing of over the last couple of years, Steph obviously out last year, Klay this year. I'm going to ask, we'll ask Russ this when he comes back, or maybe we'll have him put it out on Twitter as a response, because we know Russ will retweet this show, Armchair Sports Talk. I want to ask you, though. Both are great players. Steph Curry is probably the greatest shooter the NBA has ever seen. Klay is easily right there with him and has established himself. They've only been in the league for, I think, about nine years now. They're already in consideration for one of the top backcourts ever. But is it starting to get a little weird feeling that the team's success isn't one or the other? You need both of them for this to be the real Golden State Warrior basketball team? Because nothing else changed. Draymond's still there. They drafted Wiseman, so they got a big man. They're putting pieces where they can, but overall, it's starting to look like the rest. I mean, obviously, the two best players, that makes sense, but Steph just doesn't seem to be Steph without Klay, and vice versa.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the understanding that the league is built around multiple superstars, and it's all the parts moving around in the pool to one section at a time. They got to be together to get it done. Draymond,
yeah,
he's like a 3A player, like not even the third, like he's below, like he's just this ancillary type guy. So you got to have Klay and you got to have Steph together, and they have to put all those pieces together to win together. So I don't think, just close your eyes, try to imagine one without the other on that team. It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. It's just, it's weird to say, because like when we're having this conversation, we're talking about two of the best to ever do it, but it's like it's weird to say. Because, like, all right, we'll go back to what got you into basketball. And we've had this debate before, whether it's on the show or not on the show. But Jay got really into basketball because him and I both watched The Last Dance, the Jordan documentary, the miniseries, and loved it. I actually started watching it again the other night just because I really love it. That's the basketball I remember growing up. But, like, it's that weird debate of, we know Jordan would have been Jordan. Jordan was going to be who he was regardless. Maybe not six championships Jordan, but the scoring, the prolific ability to do what he did. But it's that question that always comes up. Would Scottie Pippen have been Scottie Pippen that we know if he doesn't wear 33 and play alongside Michael Jordan for over a decade?
I think that it's so hard to look at it because the load gets lessened when you're surrounded by Michael Jordan.
Absolutely.
like if you're Pippen, you didn't have to do a certain amount of things because you had Jordan there. So I would say no, just on the face value that you don't have that supporting cast anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, take a look at, you know, I was reading a quote about Christian Wood. Okay. Christian Wood said he's not Christian Wood when he doesn't have his setup man next to him now, because he's on the Bucks with Giannis, right?
I believe so.
Where'd he go?
I believe
you're no.
Fact check. Go ahead and give me the quote.
I forgot where Christian Wood went, but he basically said that, like, this guy next to me makes me a better player, where he gets to do less work. He literally just said this a couple days ago. I don't know if it was L.A.
He's in Houston. Houston.
Thank you.
So he's playing. So he's playing with Harden.
Yes, he came. Thank you. That's where the connection was. He gets to do less work and be able to amplify his game because he's surrounded by Harden. It's the same thing. If you have Klay and then you have Steph, take one of them out, it's a problem. You have Scottie Pippen. He's going to be who he is because he doesn't have Jordan right next to him feeding him the ball and orchestrating the plays. So
it's just such a weird concept to think about, because though it is a team game, a lot of the things we know these guys for are individual accolades, like three-point shooting, titles, and all that. But it's just that weird thing, because like you almost don't want to tug at the thread because you wonder how much it unravels. Like as you were saying that, I thought of one where I think you can make the case both guys would have been who they were regardless, because they played together for, you know better than I would, they played together for a decent amount of years, but their careers weren't based together, and that's Lemieux and Jagr. I mean, Jagr was going to be Jagr regardless, and Lemieux was going to be Lemieux, but obviously, if I'm not mistaken, they won a couple cups together, played great hockey, so it's kind of that, like, they both started there, Jagr obviously moved on, but they almost seemed like they launched each other because, hey, Jaromir's doing that, I got to do it too, and vice versa.
That is an overwhelming talent base between those two players. And you could bring it local. Give me Datsyuk and Zetterberg.
That was one I was thinking of.
They would still be, Datsyuk is still going to be picking pockets and scoring goals on random breakaways that he will get. And Zetterberg is still going to be dominant as he was as well. Like, you can have both of them on separate teams, and they're still the same quality of player.
Well, I wish you guys could see what I'm about to see. You're about to see a big smile on Justin Marcus' face, because stay tuned. In a couple weeks, we are going to have a former Detroit Red Wing on this show. Not going to tell you who it is. We want the surprise to be there, but that's definitely a question we'll have to aim towards him. We got plenty of other questions we want to ask him. I've been kind of trying to set this up for a little while now, and sent these guys the text the other night. We're all super excited, and I know this guy very well, so I'm even getting giddy, and I talk to this guy a couple times a week. So stay tuned for that. A couple weeks out, it should be a good time. But I'm excited. But, Jay, I mean, I'm glad you're in the NBA. It is an interesting concept of you don't really think the best players need that much help, but when you see how much of a difference it is when that supporting player or that player, you know, 1B isn't in the lineup, it's weird. But we're talking about hockey, so I want to shift to hockey. Kind of, we still have a couple weeks till it starts. Like I said, we're going to be touching on this every week leading up to it. But we kind of wanted to get a little prediction on how you see the 2021 season going. We'll start off with the Red Wings. It's an interesting thing because it's almost like the Pistons. They're going to be fun to watch, but they're probably not going to be very good.
Yeah, I mean, now that we know the setup here, right, you've got four divisions, and one team out of each division is going to make it to the playoffs, and that's it.
Yep.
It's a four-team playoff race. There are, well, there's Carolina, there's Chicago, there's Tampa, there's Columbus, and there's Dallas. Arguably, they are all better than us. So we have zero chance, 0.000% making it to the playoffs. The two teams that we should be better than this year, though, that is going to be Chicago. I'm sorry, not Chicago and Carolina. I take that back. That's going to be the Panthers and Nashville. We should be the third worst team in our division. Mm-hmm. On the plus side, though, because that's a lot of negative shit for a season that's about to start, let me tell you. When we were in the Central and we played Chicago as often as we did, more often than not, those games got heated. And when you go up against a team where you're going to see them multiple times, you're going to see them eight times, it's going to get heated. And I think like the Tyler Bertuzzi's of this team are about to earn their money. He's on a one-year deal, and if we are going to go up against Chicago as much as we're going to, and these matches are going to get contested and hot and heavy, Bertuzzi's going to be out there just wrecking people, and I'm excited for it. Same thing goes for like Bobby Ryan's on our teams. Like these players get to play the same team day in and day out. And it's going to get nasty, especially when, again, only one team from each division gets to actually move on. So teams are going to be mathematically knocked out of the playoffs early and often compared to a normal season. And what you're playing for after that is A, your team, but B, your job security. So expect the Wings to be knocked out early and then expect them to start knocking people out. And I hope it's Bertuzzi because he's going to earn that money off of his one-year deal he got from arbitration.
He deserves every cent of it. You mentioned Chicago. It almost led me into something. I didn't read all the details, but I did see the alert that Taze will be out indefinitely with an illness. Big hit to them, obviously. Like, because that's another one. Is Taze without Kane and vice versa kind of thing? It's those things. Like, nowadays, if there isn't a two-headed monster, you kind of wonder how that team's successful. I mean, even guys like LeBron have proven they needed the help. I agree. This is a Red Wings team that, like I said, you're watching this kind of like you're watching the Pistons. You're just watching to find your Red Wing, to enjoy the hockey, because there's not really a lot of after-season, you know, plans for success. This is a team that's in the process of building. Russ, I mean, again, Russ laid it out perfectly for us. Lots of new faces, but don't get used to them. 13 pending free agents, not counting prospects. 10 are unrestricted free agents, totaling a $21 million in cap hit. Going to be lots of shuffling for trade showcases. So this is like Russ said, this is a team that's kind of, they're not really set in stone with what they're doing. They're just going to put something out there and let's see what we get for it. Russ sent it to us, a little training camp thing. Obviously, a lot of these names should sound familiar. There's quite a few that were on this team last year, either down in Grand Rapids or up here. You got Zadina. You got Robbie Fabre, who was pretty great last year coming in. Turned out to be a good player for us. Let me get back to this. Dominic Turgeon, Riley Barber, Rasmussen, Svechnikov, Mantha, Glendening, Helm, Giovanni Smith, Filippula, Bobby Ryan, new addition. I'm excited to see what he can do for us. Like you said, Tyler Bertuzzi. Obviously, I'm jumping over a couple people. Dylan Larkin, Nielsen, Sam Gagne. Why does his name sound so familiar? Vladislav.
Gagne?
No, not Gagne. I know Gagne. Vladislav Nemestikov.
He's from Colorado.
There you go. You got on the defensive side, Hicketts, Hronik. My phone is killing me right now. Stahl, Chalowski, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. Lashoff. Why Danny DeKeyser is still on this team, we'll figure that out eventually. And then again, this is the training camp roster. This is not the set in stone for the end. Goalies Grice, Bernier, and then a couple other adds on. Russ sent us the notes, so I'll let him. I'll let Russ's notes go first here. Russ sees Svechnikov and Chalowski as the two breakthrough guys for us this year. I want to know: do you agree with those two names? And if so, or if not, who are your breakthrough guys?
I've got a couple to add, but Russ is spot on. Chalowski was drafted early. He was a first-round pick. He had, like Russ had it, he has to have a big season. Mm-hmm. We got him for a purpose. He needed to be that blue liner on this team. We got him early, and he has not showed up. He hasn't stayed up as well. On this two-way, we've been able to dump him to GR and back. We need defense, okay? Svechnikov, he might just be the lesser brother. His brother in Carolina might just be the better player, and we have to deal with that. But if he can't be a top six forward on this team, Russ is dead to rights. He's got to go. We might not re-up Svechnikov. Two names that I'm looking forward to, I think it might be harder to be the goalie in Detroit than it is to be Matthew Stafford. And the fact that we have Thomas Grice now warms my heart. I picked him. He was on my short list of players. I would love to see him, and he shows up. Thomas Grice is going to be a little old, but he's going to be stable. It's not going to be the inconsistency and the worn-out job that Jimmy Howard was doing. So I am excited for Tom Grice on the team. The other name you mentioned is Vladislav Nemestikov. He came from Colorado. He was, you know, that is a stacked team. You have Landeskog, you have McKinnon, you have Cale Makar, even though he's defense. You have a lot of studs on that team where he was bumped down. I think he played with Washington prior to Colorado as well. I'm enamored to see what he can do because this team, the doors are wide open. Anyone could jump into that team and be a star. You know, Bobby Ryan, he might be on the second line for the whole year. We have Filippula. We get Gagne. Nemestikov is another piece where it's wide open and it's anyone's gig to take over. So seeing what he can do on a very bear-covered team is good for him as well.
It is true that this is a wide open team. I am almost waiting for like that whole like invincible thing where like the coach comes out and says, we're going to be holding open tryouts. Just, you know, if you feel like you can give it a shot, give it a shot. Maybe we'll find someone. And that's not to say that like we don't have pieces. It's just there are so many, like for the name, you know, like Dylan Larkin, there's four question marks surrounding it of who's going to be there. What are they going to do there? Like you want to think that the first two lines, you could almost predict and be safe, and then after that it's anybody's game. I'm with you. I liked Jimmy. I will always support him. I've met him multiple times. Very nice guy, super great for the city of Detroit, but it's that change of pace. For the first time in over a decade, we don't have Jimmy Howard here. It's different. Bernier obviously here last year, but Grice coming in, I'm excited to see what he can do. It should be a lot of fun. I don't know enough about Svechnikov that I'm going to sit here and try to say that he is someone. Russ and you far better than I do. I do know enough about Chalowski and defenseman. You're looking at a defenseman over here because none of these guys wanted to pass me the puck, so they made me just stay by the net. So I'm gonna.
You are a great net front presence. Don't sell yourself short.
I do what I hate. One of my leading goal season was when you and I played on a team with none of our friends because they wouldn't pass us the puck, man. You and I, we had that 1-2 punch ready to go. Yeah.
Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder. Horrible, horrible hockey team. So much so that we started giving away our spots by the end of the season. I do like Chalowski, and we need to find that next good defenseman for us that we can kind of not build around, but say, here's a piece. Let's start attaching to. He's not the key cornerstone. He is. Outside of that, for me, it is Bertuzzi. You got that money in arbitration. Go out and prove it. Whether it is, you know, banging the boards and really kind of being that physical presence, whether it is being that setup man, that guy who, like I said, does all the dirty work that doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but at the end of the day, you're sitting around the water cooler or you're texting your friends and going, like, great game last night. Did you see Bertuzzi on that? He set up at least three of those goals. That's the kind of thing I want out of him. Now, the last one might be a bit of a hot take, but it's been a couple years. It's time now. Dylan Larkin, Anthony Mantha, we have these guys who are supposed to be the point getters. They're the scorers. They're the setup man. It is time now, because it appears this will be his first full season, for Zadina to be a part of that conversation. I'm not looking for him to go out and lead the team in points, but what I am looking for is I need to see him finishing in the plus far more than he's not. I want to see, even if it's just a couple setups, even if it's just a couple assists, those assists meant we scored goals, so you contributed. I don't expect you to go out there and slam in 50 goals in your first full season in the NHL, but if you can go in there and drop 20 and then have a decent assist ratio there, good by me, because it shows that was a pick that was right and we didn't spend 20 years waiting for you to develop in Grand Rapids. You got up and you started playing.
You are 100% right, and it's going to be interesting if he's going to get a lot of time playing. Maybe because of the format of that only one team can advance, and let's face it, we're not as good as Tampa.
No.
So Tampa has this locked by halfway. Maybe we do see him, but getting Bobby Ryan and Nemestikov, keeping Fabry, I mean, these could be hurdles for Zadina to have a full-time job. The good thing for Zadina, though, is that Joe Valeno got loaned out to, I believe, I don't know if it's the KHL, this is a European league, but he's not an option. So you might be getting more of Zadina, especially if Tampa locks up the playoffs. And I agree, we have to have, you know, what is the expression? You know, you start bearing your fruit. Like, these trees that we planted in the AHL, they need to start growing up, and we need to be able to tangibly see, you know, let alone name a captain to our team, but like, we need to see what this team actually is from having all these assets put together.
No, I agree. Like, we planted the crops. We made it through the winter. It's time for us to start seeing something come out of this. And I agree with you that, you know, getting past Nemestikov, getting past Ryan and all these guys, yes, that could be a hurdle. But to me, I look at it this way. If for nothing else, Yzerman has to be going into this season saying, like you're saying, it's a very unlikely thing that we are going to be that one team. It's very unlikely. It's not... Like you said, 0.000, I feel like you can't say that because stranger things have happened in the world. But I'm not, if I was a gambling man, this would be one that I'd put a dollar on because it's not a right bet. And for that reason, if I'm Yzerman, guys like Chalowski, guys like Zadina, like I don't think he gets playing time. I don't even know if he's available to play him, but like guys like Sider, he doesn't have to go coast to coast, but I'd like to see a little more of him. For that fact, if this is your best season to evaluate the young guys, this is your chance to sit down and watch these games, see a good enough amount of, and this is Yzerman. He's played and been a part of this league since the early 80s. He knows talent when he sees it, to say, all right, I like what I saw as Zadina. He needs to work on this. I like what I saw out of Sider. Not ready, but we know if we take him back down and say, hey, this is what I need you working on. Next time we see him, we'll see if there's improvement, and it grows from there. Like, same with Chalowski, same with all these guys. So for me, this is the perfect season to almost call this a training camp year of, I just want to see everybody. I want to know when we go into 2021 for that season that I can comfortably say Zadina is a full-time NHLer, and I'm comfortable with that. That's a roster spot I am allocating to him and no one else. So for me, it is that. I obviously, if we're winning, you got to look at it from a, you're in this league to win games. So if you're winning, try not to mess with things. But if we're a month in and there's three wins in the win column, then yeah, this is an evaluating season and it needs to be used as strictly that, because we have a draft. And eventually you have to know where you're weak so you can draft for that.
It's basically going to be Grand Rapids in Detroit. Like, we're going to have a functioning Grand Rapids Griffins playing at Little Caesars Arena, and I'm okay with that.
And we've said that for years. How happy would we have been if 5 years ago Holland went and said, oh, by the way, this guy, all scratches. We're bringing up five guys who we drafted and haven't seen yet, and they're going to play for 2 weeks. We would have loved that because, one, it's new guys. It's like we're seeing with the Pistons. You're discovering people for the first time that you know who they are, but you really don't know them. But two, it's such a change of pace from the Red Wings we grew up with, where if you're not 30, you're not playing in the NHL. Because that's what it was for a long time with Holland. All these guys spent a majority of their 20s sitting in Grand Rapids, and by the time they got up here, they were either too shell-shocked to do it, or whatever prime or potential they had been altered by too much time in a league that was not suited for their talents.
One other programming note in the NHL.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing that's going to be a part of this year, and we saw a taste of it last year, but it's the e-bug, the emergency backup goalie. Because if COVID actually becomes a thing, like when you said open tryouts, all I imagined was it was a mini rink, and all it was a net, and that's it. Like we need e-bugs, and there's going to be so many stories. Like not Troy Akers, I forgot what his name is, but the famous one that happened last year against the Maple Leafs.
Carolina, yeah.
His name is, dude, that's what happens at the end of the year. You just, like, the data dump is gone. The names are gone. But the e-bug situation in the NHL, that's going to be very interesting to see if we have someone behind Bernier and Greiss. Can you call it from GR? Yeah. But I want to say Troy Akers.
David,
I think I also made that up.
David Ayers. A-Y-R-E-S.
Troy Akers is probably just an announcer for a team that I don't know about. Ayers.
Did you say, was your first one Cam Akers? Is that what you said the first time? Is Cam
Akers,
isn't
he a kicker?
No, Cam Akers was a former running back for Florida State. I believe he's in the NFL now, but I don't know for sure. But yeah, former running back for Florida State a couple of years ago. He was actually someone who I put in our draft conversations because I thought he would be a good second or third round pick for the Lions to look at. So you're just using old notes and repurposing them. And I get that. That's fine. Before we wrap this up, Russ put it out as a question, and obviously the answer was given before we got on the air. Longtime Boston, he was the captain too, so that means that Boston's looking to get a new captain now too. Longtime Boston Bruin captain, defenseman Zdeno Chara. You know him, he's the tallest guy in the arena no matter who's there. Even in NBA games, he's taller than everybody. Zdeno Chara moving on from Boston. The question originally was going to be, what's a good fit for him, and would you feel comfortable if the Red Wings pursued him? Now, obviously, we would have debated that. There's no point, though. Signed with Washington, so we'll repurpose the question. Thoughts on Zdeno Chara going to Washington, where we could have potentially had Ovechkin, Chara, and Henrik Lundqvist. Obviously, Lundqvist not going to play. We don't know if he'll be back at all, but for now, Zdeno Chara and Ovechkin on top of many other people. That's just going to be a locker room that doesn't speak English is what I'm getting out of this. It's what I'm getting out of this. But
sure.
Your thoughts
your
thoughts on amazing defenseman, the 7-foot center or 7-foot defenseman, Zdeno Chara going to the Washington Capitals.
See, it's not going to be a good opinion, but the only word you were missing out of that was the word was. And he still is 7 foot a million, but the defensive profile of a defenseman in the NHL is completely different now. You see these defensemen who are getting drafted in the first round, they are fast, they are agile, and they are great at squaring up with a fast winger as well. The Charas of the world, this is the end of that. I don't think you can actually be 7 foot taller, this big brute of a defenseman who you're just going to tackle everyone down. No, you can't even put your stick near someone's gloves now without getting an infraction penalty. You have to be agile. You have to be small. You have to be fast. So for Washington, yeah, try to eke out another championship. But Chara doesn't get you there, man. That his breed of hockey is dead. You have to be fast. That's why kids don't get catapulted into the NHL that quick, because you have to be able to skate just as fast as the guy you're supposed to be covering, right? Chara's breed is done. His stick size is laughable, which I think is awesome. See, that's the equipment he has to use. I don't know what Washington's thinking. It seems like a reunion now. Like, it was great with Lundqvist. It sucks he's having open heart surgery and he's out. They just tainted the waters with it. Like, John Carlson's enough. Like, you don't need to have Chara and John Carlson.
No, I agree, but I agree with you that Chara's brand of hockey and Chara's era, it is reaching the end. Like, the game is, and it's like that with all sports. The game is just shifted to that next phase, and that next phase, for better or for worse, is speed. We're out of the years of, you know, bang bang hockey where you gotta be physically tough to play in this league, because the people that don't have the skill set you do, their job is to knock you off your skill set as often as they can. And that was Chara's bread and butter. I mean, he literally could put his arms out and cover the entire blue line with just putting his arms out. So it is that thing. But that being said, I think that's exactly why you get Chara. Chara is the last of a dying breed. Like you said, it's a last-ditch effort to claim one more cup. If they don't get it in the next year or two, Ovechkin's even reaching a point now where you can't say for sure how many more years we get to see number eight. It could be 2 years. It could be 6 years. You don't know. I mean, Jaromír Jágr played until he was 77 years old. His jersey number was literally his age by the time he retired. And he was still doing it at an effective rate. Now, granted, he had played in 20 teams in 30 years. But so you don't know how long, but I like that for that fact. Chara is that guy that still, he knows how. This is going to sound like I'm making him out to be a dirty player, and I don't think he is. He knows how to get away with his brand of hockey. He knows what he can and cannot do that is going to, that the refs aren't going to blow the whistle. And that's great for him, because all these young guys have grown up knowing who Chara is and knowing, if I get anywhere near this guy, I'm going to be eating glass. But Chara, that's not going to stop Chara from doing it. So I like the signing for that. Does it do a lot for the teams overall? No, not really. I don't think Chara is, I think, I don't know his stats off the top of my head, but I would bear to guess that Chara was a 40, 45 point guy the last couple of years at best. And that's being very generous. So he's not going to, not a lot of goals, maybe some assists, you know, some dump off and all that, but he brings a physical nature to it so that all this other speed can be even more utilized. Cause it is that I'll knock you off and then I can hit it. I can get to Ovechkin on the break for scoring opportunities.
A lot of his brand was, if you remember, we had Brendan Smith on our team, and Brendan Smith tried to fight him, and Chara, one, looked down, and two, smiled. And everyone in the Joe was like, because I think it was the Joe at the time, like, yeah, dude. And Chara's like, dude, I will mop you. I will absolutely mollywop you, and you'd be done. He's a penalty kill specialist, because all he has to do is get clear the way, clear the net out. Whoever's sitting doing the Holmstrom, just knock him on their ass. That's what he's good for.
Oh, no, I agree. But see, that's why I enjoy it, is because it's almost like it's the last of the era we grew up knowing the most is reaching its end. One last chance at a cup, great. If not, we get to see it for a couple of years, maybe a year or two, and then it's over and we're on to the new phase where we all have to get adjusted. So it's watching two guys who were the best at what they did in their era coming together for one last ditch effort, and it should be fun to see. I'm just excited to watch Chara just level, and I mean level when I say this, Sidney Crosby one more time, because I've seen it many times, and Sidney, in usual fashion, he's great at talking as long as there's two refs in between him and no one can get to him. Well, guess what? Chara can reach over those refs and get to you. So it's going to be fun to see. That's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. Listen, we're sorry Russ couldn't be here. I know you guys missed him because none of what we said made any sense. But we try anyway. Sergeant Salty, I appreciate you making the time, buddy. You're the best.
Hey, speaking of veterans on the move, we are not moving anytime soon. The three of us will always be rocking at this. You don't have to worry about Russ getting drafted or traded. Like, he's staying with us. He's not with us today, but he ain't going anywhere, damn it.
No, we're all signed to lifetime contracts, man. Because he gave us such meticulous notes, Statman Russ Ivanek, he always makes us sound a lot smarter than we really are, even when he's not here. That's how good he is. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.